This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today, I'm with Kiawit Villegas, musician, percussionist, beat producer, and DJ. Welcome, Kiawit.
Hi, happy to be with you today.
Kiawit, you received a Pivot grant from the Arts Foundation in order to acquire some equipment to stream your DJ sets. Can you tell us about what you were doing before musically and let us know about this pivot and what you learned?
Before I had applied for the grant and before social isolation and quarantine, I was regularly playing music around the greater Tucson areas in terms of drumming and DJing. I applied for the grant as a way to help sustain my livelihood and purchase different equipment that would help me be more successful in these times that we can't have any real contact or come together in large groups.
I understand that your tour with Taco Sauce was slightly interrupted.
When we booked all of the gigs and performances, it was already kind of pushing into that time when people are starting to worry about COVID. And it really, at the time for me, I feel like I was a little ignorant to it, but I felt like it was still like not a big deal. And I didn't feel any kind of stress about it, even though we started in Phoenix, went to Texas, New Mexico, and then around about to Arizona and California. With that, we were kind of getting closer to like the epicenters at the time in Texas and New Mexico. And I still didn't understand at the time, but we had one day off and we kind of gathered our thoughts and thought about what was the best situation. And when you're in it, you're in it. And for me, I'm like, we just got to finish this tour. But we decided to cut it short. We played one more gig in Long Beach, kind of ending this chapter. It was super sweet and wholesome. It was at like a wine bar. It was like kind of like a rock and roll wine bar in Long Beach. I'm forgetting the name of it, but it was really nice. People are like kind of casually drinking at these like taller tables, and we're just jamming out, rocking out super hard. And it felt really good to like have that as our last push playing together as a band.
What kind of obstacles and solutions did you come to as you decided to start streaming these live DJ sets?
There are so many roadblocks in terms of streaming and getting out there as a musician, DJ, any kind of platform, from podcasts, all the YouTubers and all the people that are working in Twitch. There's like so many different obstacles, and already as just a full-time musician, this is how I sustain my livelihood, and I barely like scrape by, you know. And I get what I need, and that's about it. With streaming, you need an interface, you need more gadgets and doohickeys, and you need to have this on this on this on this. So honestly, like, it's almost not feasible to be a streamer unless that's what you decide to do. Most people that stream before COVID were doing that 24/7. Like, that's how they sustained themselves, and that's what they invested their time and money into. That was their platform. So, like, being a baby in this bigger, grander world of streaming, I felt so overwhelmed, and I felt like it wasn't going to work, and like, I guess I'm not going to be a musician anymore. I guess I'm not going to play music. But slowly but surely, I started gathering different items. And there was this grant, the Pivot grant. And I felt like this could be a good way to like really jumpstart and get back into the groove of things. It's not the easiest thing to do, but my partner and I sat down and we like basically just like went right through it. It took us like 3 or 4 hours to write the grant and then submitted it. And I just hope for the best, you know, because of COVID and because of how many people applied, they extended the decision date for further out. So it was kind of a little stressful on that end too.
So have you been streaming on Facebook and Instagram Live?
Yeah, I've been trying different platforms. And for the past month or so, I've kind of taken a step back just to kind of figure out things and wait until I heard from the grant. I heard from the grant and then I kind of had to recalibrate everything. So Facebook, I discovered, was really the hotspot for streaming, for playing live DJ sets, because the demographic of people that I know on Facebook, it's a bigger range of people. In Instagram, it's kind of its own world. Even though it's all like owned by the same companies, by Facebook, it's definitely a different resource. And when you're on Instagram, I feel like when it pushes notifications, it doesn't really, the algorithm kind of messes with things. And then you end up having like 4 or 5 people watch. And coming from a dance party of like, you know, 200-300 people watching you, almost 500 people, you know, all these people just watching you, it feeds your energy. And when you have like 5 people, you're like, I know, like, I love the energy that, you know, commenting and like sending me a couple bucks here and there, it really like helps me. But it also feels like such a drag, because we used to host these beautiful dance parties every Friday night. And it's almost like a weight that bears down on you. But with Facebook, I noticed that more people were tuning in. And whoever I saw tuning in, I would try to curate the music to match the taste of whoever was on the live stream watching me. So there's been kind of back and forths. And then there's also the world of Twitch as well, which is still like, it's a whole other world to explore and find what actually works.
Well, if it's any consolation, that's kind of what everybody is doing, right? Figuring out what actually works. And the question for me between, you know, which is working better, Facebook Live or Instagram Live, that's one that I've been working on professionally. So,
yeah, I feel like Facebook Live is the one to work with that works better, but it also catches you on copyrights. So if you're playing something that's copywritten, and most DJs play copywritten music, if it's not even if it's a remix, it'll still like catch the parts that are like the main chorus. And I'll say, oh, you're playing copywritten music. If you keep on doing this, we're going to kick you off and no one will be able to watch it. And you're banned from doing live streams for 24 hours. So it's like such harsh consequences. And I get it in the bigger picture, but that wouldn't happen in a live scenario. Like, no one's going to be like, oh, excuse me, you can't play that because someone else has copywritten it. This party is shut down.
Wow. How did it feel the first time that popped up? Were you like, is there any workaround? Am I doomed? What am I going to do about this?
Well, I thought I was doomed. I was like, am I going to get banned or like shut out of Facebook because of this? Like when people like post comments and you get reported, I thought that's what it was going to be like. But I just caught on that it's like 24 hours, you can't do live streams, but you can function and do anything else on Facebook. So that was kind of like relieving for me.
Absolutely. Thanks for being our guinea pig.
Yeah, of course.
So on that topic, what do you think the future holds for the great dance parties that we're all missing?
I think that there will be changes, and I don't think it's going to go back to what we were used to. I think everything's going to change in so many drastic ways. I'm pretty sure they're going to have better, like more fashionable ventilators that are going to be implemented, like how the ravers have their masks already, but everyone's going to be wearing them. And I hope more people are more like aware that we shouldn't be getting in such big masses. Besides our current social climate of BLM, of Black Lives Matter, that's such a different situation, and that's like such a different topic, but also that's like so important that we gather together to represent Black Lives Matter. But in terms of like parties, more superficial things, I feel like people just need to be more aware and be more patient, because it takes one person to infect a whole bunch of people. And I feel like we need to wait for like a vaccine or some kind of solution before we can go or even think about going back to having that way of life again. It might happen, it might never happen, or streaming might be the future. So that's where I feel like I'm at right now.
So are the ravers out there with like the major masks?
Oh, is that happening? I mean, I don't know much about that world, the like the EDM world, but I know that's like part of the look too. Are masks with the little ventilators? And honestly, I wish my mask had a ventilator, because it's so hard to walk anywhere with the mask because of the thick fabric. But I keep it on, and I know I'm doing my part when I'm out in public.
Kiawi, your approach to music is resistant and decolonizing, and by this I'm referring to your participation in Taco Sauce, which is an all-femme garage band, and also Sonido Tambo, which has kind of a decolonizing mission, if I'm understanding it, and even the musical genres that you like to draw from. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, with both groups that I'm involved with, I'll talk about Taco Sauce first, that we're an all-femme female rock band that plays music that addresses different situations of what it's like to be a female. And I think it's really important to have these voices uplifted for, you know, not just the youth, but even people that are older, the ones that are kind of stuck in their ways. The future is definitely changing at a rapid rate. People aren't the same way that they used to be. The music world is developing and changing. So we address all those different ideas of what it's like to be a musician in the music scene, especially in Tucson. So there's always the backhanded comments of like, wow, you're pretty good for a girl, you know, those kind of things. So, and for me, it's also because I identify as trans femme, that for musicians that knew me before transition still treat me like a man, which is kind of, it feels so weird to me. People still will, from my past, dead name me just because they don't know who I am now. I've done so much changing and growing, and they talk a certain way to me. Like they'll use, and dude is a perfectly, like, I think it's like gender neutral, but then I hear bro and they keep on adding more and more to it. I'm like, are you talking to a man right now, or are you talking to a woman? Because I'm sure, if there was a cisgender passing woman in front of you, you would not be talking to them this way. That's my specific situations that I go through. But people that have started to see me grow definitely see me for who I am now and treat me the way I would like to be treated, you know? With that, Taco Sauce, they really help reinforce that too. They'll use my pronouns, they'll say something on stage, they'll just like reaffirm that we are three women playing rock surf style garage music. And that really helps a lot, you know? And that helps a lot of like the youth see that. Even with a lot of time passing, especially with my late transition, like it's never like too late. Honestly, it's really been an eye-opening like past like 3 years for me, because that's when I started to really make the commitment to transition. So from that point to now, having Taco Sauce and then Sonido Tambor, it's been really helpful in my identity. And then talking about Sonido Tambor, we host a dance party host a dance party every Friday night at Hotel Congress in La Plaza. And we use cumbia as a form of resistance. You know, it's a language of the people of these lands. It's the marrying of Black and Indigenous people's voices coming together to survive, to keep on moving forward. It's that fight that we have. Because all of us, we need to party. At the end of the day, like as serious as things are, we need to party, we need to gather, and we need to come together to forget about all of the harsh realities that we have to face. And we come together, we dance, we sing, we drink or not drink, any way that you feel pulled to it. But it's that like genetic DNA too of when you hear cumbia playing, even with reggaeton, with dancehall, all of these styles of music are like so stamped with our DNA that it brings something to life in you. We use that as a way to resist and say that we're not going anywhere.
I am a big fan of a book called Emergent Strategy, which is about activism and resistance and also joy and celebration. And I really do believe that we have to embrace our joy as brown people, as Black people, as queer people, as much as the outrage that we're going through and expressing. The joy has to be there and a part of our everyday too, because we're not going to make it through this without that. I just wanted to mention that I took my family to the Stone Block Party that was over the winter, and you were performing, and my daughter was taking a folklorico class at the time, and she danced and used all her folklorico zapateada moves for hours, like an hour past her bedtime, and danced until she completely collapsed.
Yes. I love it.
It was great. We had such a fun time, and I was so happy too, as you were talking about youth, to be able to take her to that event and have her dig on a percussionist like yourself and just have it be a part of the fabric of our arts and culture community.
Wow, that's so special. That's like such a little gem right there. That makes my heart so happy, especially with the past 10 years I've really dedicated to youth, and I created my own concept of sound theory for children through the Reggio Emilia philosophy called the Experimental Rhythm and Beat Studio. And I concentrated from early childhood to primary, and working with little ones and infants, kindergartners, preschool, it's just like so special. And just to hear that makes my heart like feel so full.
Well, it was wonderful because actually she had previously not wanted to participate in any kind of live music because she thought it was too loud. Previous experiences, I think she just thought it was too loud and she wasn't enjoying it. But with this being in the street, I think it was less intimidating. She was able to take her space and take her time, kind of getting closer and closer to the stage until she was right up there and she did not want to leave.
Yeah, you know, that was we talked about that as a crew afterwards, that it felt like so much more healing to be in a space that had like this place, like everyone that drank was like corralled into like one corner and then like everyone else was free to roam. And it was really nice because every Friday night, it's just, you see a lot of different people. And when it gets closer to 2 o'clock in the morning, how people act, you know, it can be very toxic and can be very overwhelming with the gazes and the stares. So having like more family oriented spaces where we can play this music feels so much more healing, because bars and clubs, they really start to take pieces and bits of you, and you start to like, your whole mind changes with that. You become desensitized to these things that aren't really that normal. So to be grounded again just felt so good. To see the little ones dancing, elders dancing, everyone together, coming together, it was just very special in that way.
Oh, and by the way, I wanted to dance, but my daughter was shooting me those glares of like, don't embarrass me, Mom.
That's so real. That's so real. I forget about that other part. That's like, the older children are like, oh, I hope they don't do what I think they're going to do.
So I went off to the beer corral and I just enjoyed a beer from a distance while she danced, and I wished I could have been dancing.
And that's kind of one of those like American mentalities of like, you know, dancing in other places is for everybody. It's not like, it's not feminine or anything like that. It's like literally for everybody. It's normal to dance, but somehow in America, it's become this thing that's like, you have to either know how to dance or whatever it is. So I don't know. I just appreciate that we can have spaces to dance, but also like we should be dancing as families too.
Absolutely. And dancing in the street is just so freeing as well.
Yeah, it is. It literally is. Block parties are life.
Kia, I always like to ask people about their artistic root. Can you tell us about some of the music that you grew up with, how music played a role in your childhood, and maybe a little bit about your first instruments?
With my whole life up until now, I've always had music in some shape or form. And it was introduced from my mother. My mother always introduced me to music, from big band, disco, funk, you know, rock, classic rock, all those different styles. And there is one specific memory that there's always that imprint when you go somewhere and then you put on a song, it just like, it's like a time traveling device. And one of my favorite moments was going, like, I think it's after Hairpin Turn on Mount Lemmon, but I remember my whole family being in the van and my mom puts on Al Green's Let's Stay Together. And at, you know, as like a 6 year old, like, I don't know what that song's about, but that dun-ga, dun-ga-ga, dun-ga, dun-ga-ga. It's just like, when I start to hear it, like, it just like brings me back to this place that reminds me of why I do things. It really brings me to a special place, I would say. Yeah, she would slowly introduce me to all these different genres, and my brother would also do that. He would show me all of like the punk and reggae and all that stuff, and my mom was more like, let me show you Brazilian music, let me show you salsa, jazz, all this. And my sister also did the same thing, but I only heard her music from her room, like with her door closed, and it was usually like No Doubt. My friends and I would call it like No Doubt Hour. It was so funny. And then my dad didn't really like, he listened to music, but he kind of listened to, and still does, like really terrible music, like hair band music. And I remember my parents were really, really, really into smooth jazz at one point in my life. And I don't understand what was going on in their lives at that moment. But yeah, a lot of Kenny G in my life. A lot of Kenny G. Oh my goodness. So yeah, it was a lot of Kenny G. But I would get introduced to a lot of different styles, a lot of classical Spanish music as well. Cumbias, on the other hand, I didn't hear a lot of cumbia or banda when I was little. My parents really didn't listen to that music. And I felt like every time we went to the swap meet, and I heard dung, gung, 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 I was like, yes, this music is amazing. The tuba, like, oh, the tuba, the sousaphones, oh, they just like, oh, it's like a heartbeat. It's like a heartbeat. And I always loved that music, and I was always curious about it. And I never understood it, because my parents said, we don't really listen to that music. We didn't grow up with that music. So here I am now as a full grown adult, finally retracing and finding all these bands, all these songs, like classical songs of like banda and cumbia, and really like studying it and being a part of it, especially with Sonido Tambo. I get to really like feel like I can be comfortable in those styles, even though for me, I'm not a Spanish speaker. Both my parents are bilingual, but they never passed on that gift. And people all the time would tell me like, oh, it's easy to learn Spanish. And I'm like, it's not easy to learn Spanish when your parents told you that they tried to teach you, but you didn't want to learn as a baby. And I'm like, that's not how it works. So I have like a lot of feelings. So every time I hear Spanish, like someone talking to me, I like completely shut down. But more so now, I feel more, I can listen to it and hear it better. But it's still like that one part of me that's like, I need to understand it now. I need to know what's going on. It's the missing piece of the puzzle. Because I appreciate what it is, and I appreciate that I get to be part of this, but I want to further that appreciation with knowing the language.
There's a lot of challenges, I think, to people who have more of a mixed cultural background. There are more challenges to your Spanish, like, oh, do you speak right? Do you speak wrong? Do you even get it? Do you even understand? You know, those kinds of things that are extra burdens on a Latinx child versus maybe just a white child. And it's hard. That can create blocks, definitely. But let me tell you, you're not alone in that. And it's baked into a whole Spanish language curriculum that's called Spanish for Heritage Learners. Because that is a very, it's actually a very common experience for a lot of Arizonan youth. And, you know, I would just like to say, don't let anybody tell you what your relationship to the language should be, or to judge you in the way you speak or your comprehension or anything. I mean, it's really a beautiful relationship that's between you and the language. I didn't start speaking Spanish until I was 9 years old, basically. And I went from monolingual to trilingual. So just remember that, everybody.
It's that same thing, like my mom would say, like, you can't learn from your dad. He doesn't speak proper Spanish. He speaks like that hood Spanish because he's from Barrio Sabaco, and she's from Barrio Centro. So there's like even hood divisions, Barrio divisions. It's like this. There's a lot going on here. There's a lot to unpack when you say these kind of things. You know, it's taken me a while, like, to let go of a lot of that, like, that anger that's behind that and be okay. And I feel like even in my transition, a lot of, like, my brain chemistry is changing in a lot of ways. And taking hormones has, like, it's almost like I'm wearing a new pair of glasses that I never had before. And I'm, like, seeing everything in a new way. And I'm like, wow, I think I can do this. And I have more patience, less testosterone going into my body.
And there are lots of ways to have a relationship with a language. And like I said, I mean, I didn't really start until I was 9, and because we didn't speak Spanish at home, I learned Spanish from moving to a Spanish speaking country, you know. And my daughter, I didn't speak Spanish with my mom, so it's awkward for me to speak Spanish to my child. So I don't speak Spanish with her as much as I'd like, but I also really care about her learning. And even if, you know, some people have told me, well, if you don't speak to her and she doesn't learn it from you, it will never be her mother tongue, quote unquote. But it's kind of like, well, I didn't hear it from my mom, and it's still an important language for me. So I'm not really worried about fitting into somebody else's box. Speaking of boxes, June is Pride Month, but really, I think it's always a good time to inspire trans, non-binary, and LGBTQ youth. You've already talked to us a little bit about your transition. What else would you like to share with emerging trans artists and musicians in our community?
It's not going to be easy. Being a trans woman is very difficult, but very beautiful. Or, you know, I'm not just saying to trans women either, but to trans mass, trans femme, non-binary, gender non-conforming, gender fluid, however you identify, there is a place for you. And if you can't find it or you don't think it's out there, it is out there. It just takes a little more research, just like transition. You can't just say, okay, I'm going to transition, and then just sit at home. You actually have to do the work to find a doctor and all of those other things, and what you decide to do up into, like, what might be your final transition stage. Yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy here in Arizona either, specifically Tucson, but the youth is so much more prideful of honing in on queerness and even just being like, I use she, her, and they, them, or however they want to do it. Like using pronouns interchangeably, seeing love as like not a one-way street, you know, it's very much just like this fluid place that you can weave in and out. You know, when I was a kid, I grew up with cis gay people, and I thought that's all that there was. You know, I thought that it was like, oh, so a guy can like a guy, but you can't like a woman, or a woman can like a woman, but can't like a man. So I remember hearing this in the table conversations of the chisme of all the comadres at my parents' house. Like my mom said, I don't get it. You can't be bisexual. You have to choose a lane or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess I can't like any, I can only like one gender. But then as time progressed, I figured out that it's like, it doesn't even matter. So like all of those things, I even think like music is so fluid. Like you shouldn't like contain yourself within one genre and limit yourself to one thing. That's what I've always been like curious about, like dipping my feet in all these different ponds and learning from them. And I think the more information that you use, the better you are, better off. You know, it gives you more opportunities. And like I said, it's not going to be easy. I always forget June is Pride Month, but Pride Month is like, I don't even really participate in it because I just feel like I am who I am. I don't need a month to represent who I am. It's just like Native American month. It's like, I don't need a month to tell me that I'm Yaki. or with any month that recognizes different ethnicities.
Well, Kiawi, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxei.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. Support for Artist Stories is provided by Benjamin Supply, presenting a full spectrum of hardware and plumbing fixtures for kitchen and bath, and their gallery, Tucson, offering national and local art in both the Tucson Warehouse and Transfer Buildings on 6th Street and 7th Avenue. With products available at will call, they are currently open by phone at 777-7000 and at benjaminsupply.com or gallerytucson.com.